Blog Talk Radio.
Inner Healers is a worldwide community of people who believe healing comes from the inside, as well as all the answers needed to lead a happy, healthy life. As such, I set the Inner Healers Radio, an online talk show on alternative medicine, to provide life guidance and help people connect their emotions with their natural inner state of health. With this radio and the help of all our guests and callers, we hope to create a space for sharing our lights online. Listen to your favorite teachers, authors, psychologists, channelers, healers, psychics, music therapists, and more. Join show host, healer, and founder of Inner Healers in Peru, Susana Stiglich, while she unravels each topic hand in hand with her wise guests. Many people around the world have improved their lives thanks to their sharing through the Inner Healers community. Join us for a joyful experience. Shows are recorded, so you can download each as a podcast to listen on your way to work or whenever needed.
Welcome to our Inner Healers Radio. My name is Luciana Stiglich, and I will be your host for today. Our special show for today is with Karma Dillon. She's a wonderful writer. She's written the Sardu series, and she occasionally also writes ebooks on specific topics, hoping to help all the people that need guidance and spiritual healing. You can find her at Smashwords, and we've included a link to her page both in our website and here on the radio site. Help me welcome Karma. We will be talking about suicidal thoughts today and how to take a stance on them. This
Hi.
Is not workable. Hello, Karma.
Hi.
Hi, dear. Thank you for being with us today. How are you feeling?
I am very happy today. I had a night of laughter last night watching stand-up comedians in downtown Los Angeles. So the laughter just put me in a great mood.
That's fun. That's really good. Karma has this book that's really amazing. It's an ebook, and you can purchase it from Smashwords. It's called How to Commit Suicide, and I just love what it says. It starts saying, if you're like me and you got on the internet tonight looking for how to commit suicide and make it look like an accident, for a cup of coffee, I'll tell you my story. I'm still here. Can you tell us how come you decided to write this ebook?
Because it's the truth, for one thing. It is the first time that I accessed the internet back in, I can't remember, but it was about 10 years ago. And that's where I was at. And those are the words that I typed in. And what happened from there is, you know, the story of why I'm still here, which, you know, and suicide prevention is now a very dear topic to me, because my family tree has many suicides in it. My mother has attempted suicide twice, which has been very traumatic to our family. And my oldest brother was diagnosed with schizophrenia when he was 19. I was 8 years older, so, you know, I went from seeing my brother be a normal kid who loves to play baseball and loved music, and then all of a sudden, you don't know who he is. And it was so disturbing to me as a child to see that somebody could simply lose their mind. And then he did end up committing suicide in 1983. He was 33 years old. I was 25. And ever since then, you know, the whole subject of the brain and why his brain did what it did and why do people want to die, that whole thing became a very, you know, just a gripping concept and topic for me to study the human brain and why my imagination is different from his hallucinations and why people sometimes all they want to do is just die. It doesn't make sense. So I find the brain fascinating. I'm kind of a scientist. But also I have suffered depression in my own life and have learned to recognize the signs and have learned to reach out for help and have just wanted to help other people because suicide has been such a traumatic wound to my family tree. It's like somebody just, it's almost like our family tree has a blight or a, you know, just a diseased section of roots, and you just want to cut away the unhealthy part so that we can not have this happen anymore. So I've taken a stand that, you know, suicide is not an option, and I teach my family, we teach each other to recognize the signs in our children and grandchildren, and to teach them that about depression, about the human brain, about chemical imbalances, and to take away the stigma associated with mental health issues and treatment of mental health concerns.
Mm-hmm. What would you tell people who might have a loved one going through something like this? Because, for example, sometimes we go on and say, oh, I have gone through this and I'm depressed, you know. But how can we recognize in our families somebody who's really needing professional help, who has gone from just feeling the day-to-day small setbacks to actually feeling depression? How can you recognize this state?
That's exactly what I want to talk about today. Before we get to how can we help people and how can we recognize the signs in others, I want to say to anyone listening to this right now who is feeling death wishes or I just want to die, if you are having any thoughts like that, I want you to call 911 or whatever emergency number in your region exists, or call a friend, call a doctor, somebody. Just make that call right now. And just tell somebody that you are feeling bad and you need to talk. Okay? So here's what I want my family and anybody to recognize is that when somebody is experiencing suicidal thoughts, that is a symptom of depression, and it's not always a symptom of depression. People can have depression without suicidal ideas. But when somebody is having thoughts like, I just want to die, I just wish I would die, how can I end my life, you know, how can I do it? If somebody starts having those ideas, that is a red flag, and it is a sign of depression. Now, it's normal for people to have depression after a major event, like a loss in the family or a job, you know, to lose a job or any kind of a loss of integrity of life. It's normal to have a period of depression. When it becomes a clinical depression, you know, a condition that a person has long term is if it goes on and that person is feeling bad most of the day, most days of the week, and it goes on for more than a couple of weeks or so after the event. But even with just a short-term depression, when somebody has a loss and they experience suicidal thoughts, they're at risk. It doesn't have to be, you know, a long-term condition. Mm-hmm. So the important thing for all of us is to realize that one of the symptoms of depressed feelings of despair, hopelessness, that's a chemical imbalance. That's a genetic thing. Person gets in one of those low points. What they do is withdraw. So you don't know. And that's the sign. If somebody withdraws, if they stop talking, if they show no interest in anything that they've had normal interest in, red flags. It's important to reach out. Often I've heard people, when someone commits suicide, everyone around them is left with this guilt of, why didn't I see it? I don't know what to see. Well, what you see is nothing. Basically, the person retreats into themselves and they don't want to burden anybody. They feel worthless. They feel insignificant. They feel hopeless. And it's not important to know why. The brain just does that. The brain is tricky. It doesn't matter why right now. The important thing is that when someone is feeling hopeless and worthless, you need to reach out to them because they are not in a place where they can care enough.
Yeah, besides caring for themselves, you were actually asking people to call somebody. But when you are in a state of depression, a very intense, profound state of depression, you sometimes have a hard time actually moving. How do you get out of bed and do it?
People try to kill themselves. They turn the car on in the garage. That's one of the worst ways. I shouldn't laugh, but most people who try that, from what I've studied, end up, you know, having brain damage, but it doesn't work. And they end up just being maimed, basically, and being more of a burden. And so that's the worst way. So you have to try to figure out how you're going to do it. And that requires a certain amount of thinking and movement. In my case, it was, well, how do I do this? Because I'm very squeamish, and I hate pain. And I hate blood. I'm not the type of person. And frankly, women very rarely will do something like a gun to the head. That's more common for men. So if you know somebody who's lost a job or who just doesn't seem like themselves, and they have a gun in the house, you know, just kind of check in on them and have conversations with them and make it safe to be real. That's the big thing. Don't try to cure them. Don't try to fix them. Make it safe for them to be a real human being and to have grief and to be as upset as they are or to feel as worthless as they feel. Don't try to fix it. Don't cure it. Just be with them. Just listen and be with them.
Mm-hmm.
And
regarding being with them, I have a close friend. I had a close friend. Who did everything, you know, to actually suicide himself. And in the moment in which he was about to do it, he kind of had second thoughts or something, and then he called his girlfriend to talk to her. But at that time, her girlfriend was in this big meeting working, and the only thing she could do, of course, she didn't know he was planning this, was grab the phone and tell him, where I'm in a meeting, honey, right now. I can't talk to you. I'll call you back as soon as I finish. He called one more time after that. She was still in a meeting, and when she got back to him, he was no longer available. Afterwards, they found him, and he had passed away. What would you tell people who might be thinking about this and who might call somebody, but this somebody is not available? How do they manage to call somebody else if they're feeling so depressed?
If the person who is feeling like they want to die, if they reach out and call somebody like he did and it doesn't work out, I mainly don't want that person to feel any shame or guilt. There's no way you can recognize that that's what's going on with the person. You have no idea. And very likely when somebody is in that state of mind, they're not going to put it out when you know, they call you at work. So it's unfortunate.
And what would you tell people like her, you know, who just got the call and didn't know? Because sometimes these people do feel guilty, and they feel very, very guilty. As you were saying, usually the family and the close friends feel guilty.
Attempt suicide or commit, it leaves everyone else in its wake troubled, and it traumatizes the people who are closest to that person. And so it's just not an option. It's one of the most cruel things you can do. So that's why I tell people, you must take the stand that suicide is not an option, and you must simply reach out for help and find help. Now, for the people who have been left behind and traumatized by these events, all you can do is educate yourself about, you know, the human condition and the brain and the science of depression, and as much as you can, understand it and just, you know, take that stand and try to enlighten other people about mental health. You want to be a big activist or advocate, you can, but you don't have to be. You can just be an average person who goes on with your life and your hobbies and your passions, and just be conscious of the fact that there is a social stigma attached to mental health concerns that is preventing people from getting the help that is available, because they're afraid to talk to a psychologist or a psychiatrist. They're afraid to admit that they have these thoughts. They're afraid of the social stigma, and they're afraid of the unknown. So rather than go like, wow, why am I feeling this bad? And I don't, you know, you don't have to feel that bad. I tell my family, it's exactly like diabetes. The brain isn't producing a certain chemical that the brain needs. The body is not producing a chemical, or it's doing something, we don't know what. And the brain isn't functioning 100%, you know? And if you can take a medication that helps and just makes you normal, don't be ashamed of that. When people take an antidepressant or an anti-anxiety medicine, they feel embarrassed. That's like a diabetic taking insulin. And so if you can help to destigmatize and make it socially acceptable for people who have mental health issues to simply seek the medical attention that is available, that there's no shame in it. It doesn't mean you're weak. It doesn't mean that you lack faith. It's a chemical imbalance in the brain. And it happens. Trauma will trigger it. The loss of a major valuable thing in your life, whether it's a job or you get divorced or you lose custody of your children, who knows? But a major loss in anyone's life will trigger depression, and sometimes it can be quite severe, sometimes it can go on for a long time, and sometimes it doesn't hit you until months later, because what happens when there is a trauma or a major event, like let's say a soldier is in combat, and post-traumatic stress disorder is very common. For many reasons, whether it's a car accident or a rape or combat, you know, at the time, you are in survival mode. So at the time of the event, you are doing, you're functioning. You're doing everything you need to do to survive. And you don't have time for depression. Your brain kind of like just is on survival mode. But months later, you know, it can start to hit you over and over again. Every time there is an event or you see something that is similar to the trauma, it can trigger this whole bunch of depression and stuff like that. I was not depressed my whole life that I could recognize. I had them briefly for a few seconds when I was in my early 20s. But it wasn't something I ever really thought, like, I don't want to live. And it would pass. I was so afraid to talk to a mental health professional.
Mm-hmm.
Because of what I had seen my brother go through, I was afraid of these issues. And when she suggested an antidepressant, I was very reluctant and scared to take it. And now I will tell you, there's nothing to fear, and there are many medications, and the doctor is there to help you. The doctor just wants to help you feel normal, functional. They don't make you high. They don't have side effects. Most of them, the result of one are types. There are many varieties. So you tell the doctor, I'm not liking the way this is making me feel. I want to try something else. They're there to help you find the right chemical that your brain needs to just feel like your normal self again.
Right. I have some clients who have tried to commit suicide. As you know, I'm a healer, so I work with different kinds of manifestations, you know. And one of the things they tell me is that they're usually very reluctant to do this because they are afraid that they will have to take this medication for life.
Right.
What would you tell them?
I've experienced that, and I have gone off of the antidepressants at times, and, you know, I don't, you know, I'll stop taking them, and I'll be fine for quite a while, sometimes for years, and then I'll start to struggle, and then I just, after a while, I tell myself, life doesn't have to be this hard. I don't have to feel this bad. I don't have to have these mood swings every day. I don't have to put my family through these ups and downs.
So you took it for how long?
I took the Zoloft the first time she prescribed it. I took it for 6 months, and then, you know, it was like, I don't need this anymore, and I quit. And then it was about 2 or 3 years later, I was in a marriage that was very troubled, and he had mental health issues also and was on Prozac, so I started using his Prozac. He had extra, and we didn't have medical insurance. So I started trying his Prozac, and I thought, oh, this works just as well as Prozac. I mean, as Zoloft.
Mm-hmm.
So I have personally been satisfied with the results of Zoloft, Prozac, and Paxil. Those are the three I've tried.
How does Social Security work in the U.S.? Because you were saying you didn't have a medical insurance. How's the Social Security working in the U.S.? For example, can you go look for somebody to help you and to give you a right prescription?
In the U.S., I wreck feeling depressed and feels like I need help. Just simply call 911. That's as simple as it is. Don't feel like you're doing a bad thing by doing that. Just call 911. They will hook you up with the right people. Okay? Anyone in the U.S., anywhere in the U.S., can dial those numbers, 911, and there is an emergency-trained dispatcher who will help them connect with the right kinds of help. There is always a way. So what we have in the U.S., we don't have great medical insurance for everybody yet. We're working on that. But what we do have is most of the drug companies have programs, free programs. If you cannot afford these medications, you can get on these programs. And the doctors are aware of this, and they help people, you know, get on it. There are free samples. There's always a way. These are not drugs that will fix a problem. You know this, that you can't just take an SSRI, which is a serotonin synthesized serotonin reuptake inhibitor. So basically, it's a pill that affects the supply of a chemical called serotonin. And that is the supply that in most depressed patients, serotonin is what's missing. And so the brain is simply not you know, doing everything that it normally would do for their thoughts and emotions. So, you know, you can take these SSRIs and or other brand, other types of anti-anxiety and antidepressants.
Something else that I've noticed in my clients is that sometimes when they commit suicide, as you were saying, they're going through very difficult times, which is our topic for this month, which means change. But some of them, for example, not only have parents or partners, sometimes they even have children, they have kids. And it's difficult for them to think about their families or their kids because of how bad they're feeling at the time. What would you tell people with kids about this?
Well, it's normal when a person is experiencing depression and suicidal thoughts. It's normal for their mind to be focused on all this darkness and just sort of in their own little world. It's normal for them to have apathy, which means that they aren't feeling any concern, any empathy for others. They're not thinking of others. And that, I'm a terrible person. I don't even care about my kids right now. That's all depression. Get some help.
So about your ebook, how come you decided to write this ebook? I loved it. I read it and I really, really loved it.
Well, honestly, we all have our own voice, so I've always written.
Was writing for you a way to connect with yourself?
I was just born linguistic. And I really don't have a choice. What I do have a choice about is whether or not I share what I write. You know, and that's the reason I had for sharing this story, How to Commit Suicide, is because, number one, I want people to know that the Sardou lady has had this kind of background. I want people to know that it's okay to talk about these things. I want to destigmatize the whole mental health thing. And I think really I share this because I loved my brother. I loved my brother. And he had a very sad adult life because people were afraid of him. And there was no reason to be afraid of him just because he was odd, just because he talked about strange things, and just because he hallucinated. He was not violent. And I want people to know that most people who are mentally ill are not violent or criminals. In fact, the mental ill population has been studied, and the percentage of violent criminals is the same as the normal, healthy population. It's the same. But the movies love to portray the mentally, you know, the crazy people. The crazy people are the dangerous people. That's not true. There are many people who are, you know, it's safe to talk to a schizophrenic. For the most part, they're as safe as anybody else, and they're interesting. And they're just another human being that is suffering in a way that you're not. So listen, you don't have to fix them. You know, they just want companionship. They just want friendship. But he was so lonely. You know, that was one of the problems, is that people were afraid. They would realize there was something different about him, and they would avoid him. And so he had this loneliness in his life, and he was ostracized. And I have learned that, you know, his life did not have to be as hard as it was. He was harmless. So I want to enlighten people because I loved my brother.
It really gives a sense of meaning, right?
I literally wrote Sardou after his suicide. If people understand all these things about him and me and my family, and they look at Sardou through that filter, they see why the villains and the issues in that story are what they are, why the imagination is dangerous in that culture. And, you know, I just am, and it's the same thing as, you know, let's not ostracize people like my brother just because they're different.
What about doing the series, the Sardou series? How did you feel when you were writing them?
Well, I have to say, and I have to recommend creativity and imagination as a very good, healthy outlet for improving your mental and emotional health. I think the more that you use your imagination and daydream and allow yourself to live in a fantasy world for periods of time every day, allow yourself to just dream. I happen to think that the imagination is another dimension. I'm not, you know, scientifically convinced of that, but it's possible. And, you know, I'm not the only person who has thought that. That was the basis of the Twilight Zone series, is that the imagination, the human imagination, is another reality, another dimension of experience. So allow yourself to play with your imagination every day. It's healthy, and it will help you to have a happier life. So, you know, I think for me, writing Sardou after I wrote the first book, actually several friends who have read it just begged me to expand and write more, and I didn't want to because I'm not a science fiction fan, but I did see an opportunity to make a difference in the world through that whole train of thought. So I kept playing with it. I kept playing with the idea that the imagination is another dimension and that there are 11 dimensions. It's a scientific theory, and I like to play with it in my mind. So it's been very healthy for me writing Sardou, and then occasionally I write the other sort of memoirs just to, you know, show people that I'm a real person, that I have, you know, real passions and real concerns, and I really want to make a difference in the world, and this is what I care about. I care about children. I care about preventing child abuse, and I care about, you know, helping people who have mental issues to come to terms with it and helping society to just stop making such a big deal about it.
Would you say that creativity is a way to get to a point in our lives in which we know for sure that suicide is not an option?
I like that idea, but I really think that it's not so much that creativity is what got me to this place, as much as it is just that you know when you realize what it does to other people, and that it just keeps doing it over and over, and the fear that everyone in my family has to live with, the fear that their child might commit suicide, or they might get that call that a brother or sister has committed suicide, or that grandma committed suicide. We all live with this anxiety, this dread. It's horrible. It's horrible to live with that. So I just said to my family, we have to stop this. We have to stop this. You know? And so it's mostly just compassion for the survivors, that what it does to people. You know, I've seen my siblings traumatized by my mother's attempts. I've seen my mother traumatized because her mother committed suicide, her sister committed suicide, her uncle committed suicide. These things have traumatized my mother. Her first son committed suicide. You know, so I'm just telling people, it's horrible. Somebody has to find that body. No matter who it is, that person is going to be troubled. Don't do it. It's mean. It's mean.
In your ebook, you say something about it. You say that you have to think about the person who will find your body. That it will definitely be somebody that cares for you, you know, that you know and that cares for you.
Right. In my case, what happened was because I wanted to figure out how to make it look like an accident, thinking that somehow that would make it easier for everybody. But, you know, basically I wanted to die, and I didn't want to hurt people by doing it obvious as a suicide. So I got on the internet how to commit suicide. The first page that came up, as you know, because you've read the story, was a suicide prevention group in the UK called the Samaritans. They have a very good webpage, and you know, and I clicked on the link not knowing that it was a suicide prevention page. And they made me laugh, and they made me want to, you know, live another day. They brought me to my senses. Part of that was through laughter. Part of that was because it was like it was just a really well put together webpage. And they made me feel safe, and by what they had on their webpage, enough that I clicked on their confidential, you know, email, and I wrote to them. So because I felt safe in opening up, and because something they put on that webpage made me realize that, you know, it brought me to my senses, and they also made me laugh. So I wrote to them, and they wrote back immediately, and I started to have some email exchanges with them, and that got me started, you know, and that's when I started taking Prozac again. And they helped me, you know, choose to live and choose to overcome my problems. I forgot the question.
It's okay, because we're editing the show, so I just placed a question that has to do with what you're saying. We have 5 more minutes for the show. Is there anything you would like to tell the people? I would encourage everybody to purchase Karma's ebook, because it's really soothing, you know, to read that there's somebody out there who's intelligent, who's smart, who's funny, who's just like us, you know, and that is also going through something like this.
If someone listening right now has ever experienced this kind of death wishes, or just feels like they wish life would get it over with, I encourage you to just do something. Just do something other than suicide. Anything. Find someone to care about. Find someone to talk to. Do something. Anything but suicide. Don't hurt yourself. Life, I'm telling you, life is so much fun. Such an adventure as a human being. Laughter is still the best medicine.